Is anybody new here? Anybody here that's really first time kind of newish? Okay. Welcome. And you know who is Arjuna, right? Arjuna. Anybody here that doesn't know who is Arjuna and needs a little explanation of who is Arjuna? Everybody has an idea, at least? Okay, good. Arjuna is an eternal associate of Krishna. That is to say, wherever Krishna performs his pastimes in this material world, the Sanskrit is his bhoma lila, his pastimes in this world, Arjuna is with him. And we say eternal associate because Krishna's pastimes, as long as the material world exists, because there's cosmic annihilation for some time, then again creation, but as long as the cosmic manifestation exists, Krishna's appearing somewhere in this universe. The explanation goes like this. Just like somewhere right now on this earth planet, the sun is rising. And then a little after that, another place the sun is rising, another place the sun is rising, another place the sun. As long as the earth is continuing to spin, as long as the cosmic manifestation exists, the sun is always rising somewhere and setting somewhere, and it's noon somewhere or midday. Similarly, Krishna's pastimes within this universe are eternally going on, eternally, as long as the universe exists. And wherever Krishna is there, Arjuna is there, because they're eternally associated in the worldly pastimes. So now here's two things. What happens when the universe is withdrawn? What happens to Arjuna? And then here's another one. There's many universes. So how does that work? How does Arjuna always exist with Krishna? Well, Giriraj Maharaj asked Prabhupada that question. And so after, let's say, Krishna is born, Krishna Janmashtami, and somewhere Krishna is born, and somewhere Krishna is born, and somewhere, like the sun is always rising. And then at some point Arjuna is with him, and Arjuna is with him. And then, but Arjuna is with Krishna for the duration, almost the duration of Krishna's life. Arjuna and the other brothers, the Pandavas, they depart shortly after Krishna's departure. So that's a lot of years when Krishna was present and Arjuna was present. But Krishna is appearing and there's somewhere and somewhere and somewhere. So Giriraj Maharaj asked, does Arjuna expand? Are there multiple Arjunas? You understand the question? And Prabhupada's answer was yes. He didn't give a technology of how Arjuna expands. But for Krishna's pleasure, his devotees are endowed with capacities to do things that they're ordinarily not, we don't have expansions of ourselves in multiple places. But for Krishna's pleasure, that somehow takes place. There's many mysteries. Get used to it. There's many mysteries in spiritual life. That's one of them. So since Arjuna is eternally associated with Krishna, then that means he's eternally a hero. What was the phrase he used? What's the theme? Arjuna is our hero or something? What's the words? Yasoda Nandana, where are you? What's the phrase? Does somebody here know? Just one person say.
Be a hero.
Be a hero. So he is a hero. But, although he is a hero, he, in the pastime of Bhagavad Gita being spoken, Arjuna becomes a hero. That is to say, he takes on a position like us. We're not heroes. We're conditioned souls. And conditioned souls can become heroes, so become like Arjuna, become a hero, so he becomes like one of us, bewildered, confused, uncertain about duty, perplexed by the dualities of material existence. So we're going to hear through the wisdom of Bhagavad Gita how this takes place. And here's a little phrase that may help us understand what's going to be presented in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna becoming a hero. This ancient Vedic wisdom presents to the world a yogic way of life and teaches people how to become such a yogi who is not disturbed in mind, even amid the threefold miseries, or elated when there is happiness, and who is free from attachment, fear, and anger. Such a yogi is called the sage of steady mind. This is chapter 6, Bhagavad Gita, the sage of steady mind. Well, that's not us. Chanchala hi mana Krishna, Arjuna says. He's feeling, as a conditioned soul feels, the mind is chanchala or flickering. You know, distracted minds. It's an everyday thing. So, within this world in which we live, this is a yin-yang symbol, it's a world of duality. And conditioned souls, well, even liberated souls, souls want happiness. But if we want happiness apart from Krishna, you get this. Because with happiness comes distress. Just like it's nighttime. And the world of duality, there's nighttime and there's daytime. It's winter in Chicago. It's cold. But then there's its opposite. There's warm. There's wet and there's dry. There's happy. There's sad. There's pleasure. There's pain. There's honor, dishonor. Wherever there's this, there's that. It's the nature of this place. It's a place of duality. So, if you want happiness, you're going to get that. If you forgot Krishna. If you remember Krishna, it's a whole other story. It's the realm of the absolutes. Or the place of higher consciousness where even situations that appear to be uncomfortable are impetuses for ecstasy. And that's another topic. We'll just do with this one for right now. Once again, the bhakti process is to awaken our the fullness of consciousness. In fact, that's the purpose of creation. There's a some few years ago, it was a really interesting situation. I met a Chinese lady, because I go to China. Somebody had met a Chinese lady. She had started practicing bhakti. And when I was introduced, she said, I just have one question. What's that? Why creation? Good question. So, here's a short answer. There's two reasons. One is to provide the living entities who desire to enjoy separately from Krishna, they can try. But when you try to enjoy separately from Krishna, this is what you get. You get that which looks like happiness, and wait a while and it's distress. And the real happiness is forgotten, is covered by that duality, happiness, distress, illusion. And then the other reason is to provide the living entities a chance to reawaken their fullness of happiness. And that's, with creation comes this process of sacrifice that's described in Bhagavad Gita that Krishna says, chapter 3, in the very beginning of creation, I sent forth men and demigods, along with this, the duality thing, and the process of sacrifice to connect with that which is beyond the temporary, beyond duality. So that's what this yogic process is for, because there's always this, but the stage of a steady mind is beyond this. So Bhagavad Gita is to take us beyond this, beyond duality, into the realm of transcendence. Transcendence meaning that which is beyond the temporary, that which is beyond duality, that which is beyond karma, that which is beyond the modes of nature, the realm of light, some people like to call it, the spiritual realm. Not heaven, the spiritual realm, beyond everything that is created and destroyed. So Bhagavad Gita is meant to take us there, and Arjuna is taking the role of one of us that's in this duality place, although he's an eternal associate of Krishna. He's acting like, you know, he's bewildered, like we become by the illusory energy. So before we're going to speak about how Arjuna goes from duality to transcendence, we'll learn a little bit about Arjuna. Maybe during the course of this month you've become quite familiar with Arjuna. I mentioned at the beginning, you all have some idea. So Arjuna was the third of the five brothers who were all sons of Pandu. And as Pandu was the rightful heir to the throne, the firstborn son of Pandu, Yudhishthir, was the rightful heir to the throne. And when the Pandavas were growing up, the image here shows Drona, Acharya, who had learned military skill from, of all people, Parashuram. When you see these illustrations up here, the one that's number 6 up there, he's carrying a chopper. That's Parashuram. When you see somebody with a chopper, you know who that is. Parashuram. Although Parashuram was born in a Brahmin family, he had the spirit, when his father was killed, to avenge his death. And with his chopper, he went all over the countryside so many times, 20-something times, and annihilated the Kshatriyas. He was a powerful warrior, Brahmana. And Parashuram gave all of his secrets of military skill to the person who's pictured over here on our left, that's Drona. Because Drona was a Brahmana. So he would only give his teachings to another Brahmana. He gave it all to Drona. And then Drona took the role of being the teacher of the Pandavas, these five brothers, and equally so, the 100 sons of Dhritarashtra, Pandu and Dhritarashtra, the Pandavas and Dhritarashtra's 100 sons. And the best, very superlative best of all the skilled in the matters of archery was Arjuna. The painting is showing there was a contest at the end after they had all been trained. Drona wanted to see who was the best. So the contest was, there's details in Mahabharata, but there was a golden, not a live one, but a golden bird in a tree. And the question was, what do you see? And everyone said what they saw. And Arjuna only saw the eye of the bird, and he fired the arrow and pierced the eye of the bird. So he was the best. He was the best of archers. In many, many ways, he displayed his best of archery. And one of them was this one. When it came time, there's details, but when it came time for the wedding arrangement, the Swayambhar ceremony for the daughter of King Drupad, pictured here as Draupadi, the king, Drupad, only wanted Arjuna to marry his daughter. So he devised a challenge that only Arjuna would be able to perform. There was one other person, but he was eliminated, Karna. So the challenge was, there was a disc rotating on the ceiling that had a hole in it, and on the other side of the hole was a fish, and the person, the archer, was not supposed to look at that revolving disc that had a hole in it to shoot the fish that was on the other side of the disc, but they had to look at a pool of water that was rippling and see the reflection of the revolving disc and the fish on the other side and shoot the arrow through the hole in the disc. And nobody could do it except one person, Arjuna. So because of Arjuna's archery prowess, there's Draupadi with the garland. She garlanded Arjuna, and they had their little marriage. There was a little scene that happened after that. Other Kshatriyas challenged Arjuna, and together, just two, Arjuna and Bhima with his club, Arjuna with his bow and arrow, they defeated everybody and walked out of the assembly. So, super qualified in military skill. And so many events took place, ending up in a battle. This is where the Bhagavad Gita opens. And there's Arjuna holding his bow, asking Krishna to show him who's on both sides of the battlefield arrayed here. And he has some negative emotions, real big time. Seeing what he sees, he becomes very distressed. And somehow, by Krishna's arrangement, that distress turns into transcendence. That's a lesson for us. So we can call Bhagavad Gita the yoga of distress. And here's a little sample of Arjuna's distress from chapter 1, Bhagavad Gita. My dear Krishna, seeing my friends and relatives present before me in such a fighting spirit, I feel the limbs of my body quivering and my mouth drying up. That's on the physical side, but he's in a lot of anxiety about what he's seeing in front of him. That's a big negative emotion. My whole body is trembling. My hair is standing on end. My bow, Gandiva, is slipping. Look at that. His bow is slipping from his hand. And my skin is burning. Fear. What are the consequences of this terrible situation? I am now unable to stand here any longer. I'm forgetting myself and my mind is reeling. I only see causes of misfortune. Big time pessimism. Doesn't see any good in any of this. Better for me if the sons of Dhritarashtra weapons in hand were to kill me unarmed and unresisting on the battlefield. Feeling helpless. Sometimes you might feel helpless or know somebody feeling helpless. I give up. And Prabhupada's comment is, the perplexities of life are like a blazing forest fire which is not set by anyone. The miseries of life similarly appear without our asking for them. It's just part of the duality thing. You want happiness? Guaranteed, you're going to get distress. That's if it's the duality kind, the material happiness apart from Krishna happiness. Guaranteed. It's just the nature of the place. So now, we're not on a battlefield feeling all those feelings, but for us, in general, the battlefield is the battlefield of the mind, because the mind is the place where we're feeling these different feelings. There's a whole chapter in Krishna's teachings to Uddhava, where Uddhava wants to know, what's the root of unhappiness or sadness or distress? It's a whole long chapter. Krishna gives a long story, and the short answer is the mind. Some say this, and some say that, and some say the other thing, and they're all refuted, and it's just, it's the mind. So the orientation, it's not the circumstances of life, it's the orientation of the mind. It goes like this. It's really simple. We're moving along the path of life, and stuff happens. And that stuff that happens is the fruit of our past karma. And how you respond to the fruit of your past karma is the mind. And the mind is influenced by the modes of nature, and you're going to feel this or feel that. The happiness or distress. As the saying goes, one man's food is another man's poison. When there's a challenge, a kshatriya goes, yeah. And when there's a challenge, a weak person goes, oh no. So, the real battle is the battlefield of the mind. That's where the battle goes. So now, in Bhagavad Gita, we're going to learn how this negative emotion that Arjuna is feeling, varieties of negative emotion, it's the beginning or the seed for this experience of higher consciousness. We can also approach Bhagavad Gita that way, become a hero like Arjuna becomes a hero. He became a hero by hearing Bhagavad Gita from Krishna. And there's abundant topics. There's different ways of describing what those abundant topics are. But it starts with us. The essence of all the Vedas, which includes the essence of Bhagavad Gita, starts with understanding who you are. Because if you don't know who you are, good luck finding anything, finding reality of any kind, if you don't know who you are. You'll have another idea of who you are. It's the idea of who you aren't. That's called false ego. And if you live by the life of false ego, supposing somebody, you know, the negative emotion of anger. Someone gets triggered. I know some people. They get triggered by anger. They're like really nice. And then something happens, and, you know, Mr. Hyde comes out from Dr. Jekyll. And, you know, they get triggered, and they lose it. They don't even know what they're doing. And they think they know what they're doing. Ask them when they're in that angry mood. They'll tell you why they're justified doing what they're doing, and so on and so on. I just had spent some time with somebody that's such a nice devotee, and every now and then just loses it. and feels it's justified because. So, Bhagavad Gita is teaching us who we really are. We're living entities that are eternally fragmental parts of the whole, fragmental parts of Krishna, the Supreme Person. And the soul is different than the body. The soul is sojourning, as this illustration shows. Very early instruction, Bhagavad Gita. Dehi no spin yata dehe komaram yovanam jara tata dehantara praptir diras tatra namo yati. Bhagavad Gita teaches who we really are. Just starting from who we're not. That's a starting place. We're not the false ego. The false ego connects us with the misidentification with the temporary. And then identifying with the temporary, we want to become the enjoyer of the temporary, and we're buying into the duality thing. So pause, step back from who you aren't, and so you can understand who you are. Knowledge gives detachment. It's a classic Vedic couplet, Jnana Vairagya. Anyone that's a little familiar with the Vedas knows this. Jnana Vairagya, knowledge detachment. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching is beyond knowledge detachment. It's engage yourself with who you really are. That's Yukta Vairagya. That's really nice. And then everything, including me and you and all of us and everything that's material, the tree, the road, the Lake Michigan, and, you know, whatever's the cold air, everything is Krishna's property, and everything should be used in the service of the proprietor of the property. That's proper. So Yukta Vairagya. And since we're this spark of life within the body that's changing lifetime after lifetime, during this lifetime, one body to the next lifetime, and so on, where do we come from? And where are we going? There's a really simple explanation about reincarnation. That if you meet people who say, particularly people that are theistic, that means they accept that there's God, but they say they don't believe in reincarnation. Here's a really simple thing that you can say. Two things. Do you believe in the soul? And they'll say yes. So that means, by definition, the soul is eternal, right? Right. Soul is eternal. So how do you know where you are right now? Through the body. You have senses, and you can perceive. We're in this place, and the light's on, and it's night, and it's... Because we have senses, we can perceive where we are. Right? Then, if you're a believing religious person, you become good, you have faith in something that's good, you have faith in Christ, you're going to go to the good place. If you're Muslim, you're going to go to the good place. You're going to go to heaven. Now, question. How do you know when you're in heaven? Through senses. You get a body, right? Otherwise, how do you know where you are? So, after this Gaudiya comes another body. It's right in your teachings. You do believe in reincarnation. Now let's go the other direction, because the soul is eternal. If it exists, either going to go to the good place or the bad place, because the soul is eternal, where will we be before this body? You get a blank stare when you ask that question. commonly. There's some other very interesting headstand answers that I've heard. Well, the soul isn't eternal. Unless you accept such and such, and then the soul is eternal. Anyway, there's different. The theology of all religion may currently deny the existence of reincarnation. Where are you going after this life? Well, you know, commonly is the good place or the bad place, heaven or hell. But so the soul is eternal, and do we know where we're going? Well, if you have faith, you can say, I'm going to the good place because I do good things, and that's my religion. I believe in doing good things, and I go to the good place. But supposing your life is made up of bad things, do you still go to the good place because you believe you're going to go to the good place and you believe you're doing good things? Next time you're driving in your car, just look at what the eating and drinking establishments are in America. And they're supported by people who are believers, without going into the detail. Are those people that are believers and going to those eating and drinking places going to heaven because they believe they're doing good things? Or are they responsible for the acts of killing and intoxication and so forth? I'll leave it to your good intelligence to understand. Where are we going after this life? That's a good question. Bhagavad Gita gives the answer. Udvam gacchanti sattvastha madhye tishtanti rajasa adho gacchanti tamasa. Depending upon the modes of nature, you go up, stay in Chicago, or go down. Madhye tishtanti rajasa. The mode of passion, one stays in this middle planetary region. Adho gacchanti tamasa, mode of ignorance, one goes down. So if one knows that, then you want to go up, you don't want to go down. You want to take birth again in Chicago? I don't know. So there's a purposeful life. What's the purpose? That's a good question. Like this Chinese lady asked, why creation? What's the purpose of it? Why is it there? Because one can argue, there's suffering here. So why did God create a place that has suffering? Well, the answer is it's a place of duality. We wanted happiness without Krishna that doesn't exist, so we got the duality program. The happiness that looks like happiness, but it isn't, and it turns into distress, which isn't real distress. The real distress is forgetting who we are and forgetting our loving relationship with the source of everything. So the Arjuna's turning point is when he is experiencing these negative emotions and his intelligence, what to do about it, is perplexed. He turns to his friend Krishna, and the dynamic of the relationship shifts from friend to shishya. Shishya means disciple, or please instruct me. Shishyasteham shadivam tvam prapanam. Prapana means surrender, take shelter. He takes shelter of Krishna and wants Krishna to instruct him how to overcome his negative emotion, how to have intelligence that's steady, like we heard, the steady intelligence that isn't pushed and pulled by distress and happiness, and how to go beyond all that. Be detached from duality, be detached from the temporary, and go towards that which is beyond the temporary and beyond the duality. Go towards transcendence. We require, it's a principle, we require good instruction. Prabhupada gives this nice example. It's really simple. Prabhupada had a way of making things very simple. Supposing you're in the bottom of a well. How are you going to get out? You're in the bottom of a well. You can't climb out of the well. You can call, help! And if nobody passes by and lowers a rope down the well, you're going to be at the bottom of the well for the rest of your life until you're finished. And if somebody comes along and hears you and saying, help, and they lower a rope, and just grab onto the rope, and you don't even have to climb the rope, they'll pull you up. But supposing you say, well, wait a minute, who are you, and what's this rope, and hey man, take the rope. I'm going to pull you out. And that's the intelligence that Arjuna manifests that changes the situation from duality to transcendence. Now, some people argue, I heard Srila Prabhupada on three occasions speak. Some people say, oh, I'll never be so fortunate. Krishna isn't available for me to ask. Please instruct me. So Arjuna was fortunate, but I'll never be so fortunate. And Prabhupada, with a fist on the table, said, no. Because when one speaks the words that Krishna is speaking on behalf of Krishna, then it's Krishna speaking. And that's this principle of disciplic succession described in Bhagavad Gita. Our founder Acharya, seated here on this elevated seat, Vyasasana, is coming in disciplic succession from Krishna. When we hear from such a personality, we're hearing the words of his spiritual master, which are the words of his spiritual master, which are the words of his spirit. We were discussing this weekend, during this retreat. And it's actually Krishna's message coming to us through disciplic succession. And when you read Bhagavad Gita carefully, you'll understand. By taking Bhagavad Gita as it is, hearing Krishna's words from one who is simply transmitting Krishna's words, you're getting Krishna speaking. There's a devotee I know who said, I read Bhagavad Gita, but I struggle with it. Tell me about what's your struggle. Well, I don't find taste in the subject matter. It's kind of like, I know I'm supposed to read it, and I try to read it, so it doesn't go in. So I said, try this. And it worked. They tried it, and it made it a total different thing. Before you read Bhagavad Gita, your Bhagavad Gita is closed, and you're contemplating, my dear Lord Krishna, you spoke Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna for me. So in these words, when I open the book, I know that you're speaking to me, although you're speaking to Arjuna. So read Bhagavad Gita that Krishna is speaking to you. It's personal. It looks third person, but it's actually first person. And see what happens. Tell me after a week or 2 weeks. Tell me after a week or 2 weeks what happened. And the answer was, it's a totally different experience. Because when I read that Krishna is speaking to me, it touches my heart. It's not just information or that kind of abstract knowledge. It's a loving exchange with Krishna that he's revealing how you can overcome the duality thing and become situated with him in the eternal loving relationship with him beyond duality, beyond the happiness-distress thing. And with that beyond happiness-distress thing, this clarity of what transcendental happiness is. So we have this opportunity from our founder Acharya to take that message and following in Arjuna's footsteps become a hero. A hero is one who conquers this battlefield situation of material existence that takes place largely in the mind. Now the senses are involved too, and ego is involved too, but the mind is a big resting place of our experience of material existence. And Bhagavad Gita can take us beyond that. We just need to connect with this disciplic succession, and our primary shiksha guru is our founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada, or pictured here. So, what's our schedule? You have to look at your machine?
Till 6:30, and then afterwards the short video.
Okay, so we have 5 minutes for any comments or questions or anything you'd like to share. Pretty good, I kept it within time. I usually speak too much. Over there, you can all see the screen? Okay, good. Yes.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. So if you are in a work environment where you see people like eating all kind of food stuff but still trying to give the message of kindness around Christmas, and like personally for me, I understand that they are eating all kind of food stuff, still they are trying to pass on the message of kindness, that will not touch the heart of students. And in such an environment, it's very difficult for me to keep quiet and just stay with whatever the situation is. But the instruction is to not to disturb them, particularly when I'm just starting with them. So what should I be doing? It bothers me very much, very bad. I want to help.
Take that emotion and direct it towards a place of higher consciousness. Depending upon the relationship with the person, Super Soul will give you the intelligence how to direct it towards the place of higher consciousness. And it may be you just pause. And maybe you just invest in the friendship with that. It depends on the circumstance, the relationship, the time and the place. But don't like, I'm responding to your question. It bothers you very much. What do I do? Don't take the emotion and tuck it under the rug. Take the emotion and direct it. My dear Lord Krishna, I have these feelings. Please give me the intelligence. How can I be of service to this person in this situation? Depends. I had a discussion, I think it was in, I can't remember what city I was in. Hang on. Teenager saying the same thing about her best friend in school. And one of the friction points in their best friend relationship is the eating habits of her best friend. And her best friend, when they speak about eating habits, she says, why not? It's yummy. So she wanted to know, how do I respond? I said, depends. You know, same answer, depends on the person. But perhaps you can explore, because you have a relationship, it's your friend, you're not going to break the relationship because you're friends. But knowing your friend, ask your friend, is that the basis of deciding what you do? Because it's yummy. and, you know, start there. Is there another consideration besides it's yummy? Hedonism is not a standard to live by. It leads to, you know, depending on the person. If she's a Christian, you know, there's a certain story in the Bible that leads to degradation. Hedonism leads to degradation. Or look at, you know, the world in which we live. If it says, if it feels good, do it, that's not a principle to live by. It leads to degradation, not to elevation. Or you could say to your friend, well, I'll tell you what, human flesh is even yummier. Now, you won't go there, right? But why won't you go there? Because it's yummy. So you draw a line, not, you know, besides, you know, it's yummy. So what are some other factors to consider about what you'll do besides it's yummy? You know, don't just put in juxtaposition something that they're already bought into. Take point, are there holes in your bucket? Does it hold water? And if it's got, if a sieve and not a bucket, maybe you need to take a look at another bucket. Another principle to live by besides it's yummy. Etc. So it depends on the person. In this case, it was a teenager with her friend. Now, you know, and don't be attached. You gotta get your friend to do something other. But if you place the relationship here, and through that relationship you try to help elevate consciousness because of your elevated consciousness, not because I can't stand it, that's not going to go very far with somebody that's got another value. You don't want them to impose their value on you. So be respectful and depending upon the relationship. And what to find out what their point of view is and take a look at their point of view. Take that emotion, don't tuck it, but direct it to Krishna. How do I, please give me the intelligence, how can I be of service to this person? Okay, there's another question, we have to do a video. Okay? Could you take the microphone to this young man in the back who's like enthusiastic and wants to ask something? And that's it for this evening.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Is realization a function of time? So is it, when do you start in your life and how much time do you invest? Is realization a function of time?
Is what a function of time?
Self-realization.
Which? Sense gratification?
No, self-realization.
Self-realization. Is self-realization a function of time? That's what your question is? That's a very abstract question. I don't exactly understand what you mean. Could you say it in a different way?
So does it...
Does it take time to become self-realized? Is that your question?
Yeah, like, does it matter when one starts in their life?
Oh,
does it?
Okay. Two things. No. And the time to start is when the little light that goes on that says, you know, I really want to know who I am. That's when to begin. And then, if you know, the function of time, how long does it take? Is that part of the question? I have a favorite Prabhupada said to that one. One reporter asked, Swamiji, how long did it take to become Krishna conscious? Or you're saying self-realization. How long did it take to become self-realized? Prabhupada, less than a moment. And in that less than a moment, just two things. The tendency to be the enjoyer of the fruits of your activity. You have to let go of that. And the other is the tendency to know the unknown by the power of speculation. You have to let go of that. Just those two things. Generally, people are attached to those two things. So generally, the process is gradual. But all it takes is less than a moment. Just those two things. He's just repeating Rupa Goswami's words in very simple language. Anyabhilashita shunyam. Shunya, zero, zippo. Jnana karmadhyanavratam. Fruit of activity and mental speculation. Zippo. But it's gradual because there's a tendency for those things. So to overcome those tendencies, it's gradual. Self-realization commonly is gradual. It's likened to the rising of the sun in the morning. It's gradual. Self-realization. And when, whenever that little light that goes on that says, you know, I want to know who I am. And that's also gradual. You know, even wanting to know who you are, which is speak of knowing who you are, it's gradual. But it's when, that's when. Microphone up front here. What's going to happen next? You going to say something? Then he's going to play something?
Yes, so what we'll see next is a short video put together by one of our congregation members here, Prahlad, to commemorate an event that happened a couple of months ago, where Solinus Rumpad Swami led a group of devotees on pilgrimage related to various pastimes and places from the Ramayana. So this is a short video about that experience, and then there's the opportunity to take these experiences home with you. So hopefully...
I haven't seen the video either. This is a premiere, or whatever they call it. Preview or something.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.
So for anyone that is interested in seeing more and taking them, anybody that is interested in bringing one home with them today.
I'm going to suggest some edits to what Prahlad created here.
Yes, sir.
Because it looks like just like lots of kirtan. In advance of this visit to the Dandak Forest, I had imagined that as in our Gaudiya line, there's volumes and volumes and volumes of commentary by our acharyas about Krishna and his pastimes in Vrindavan, Mathura, and Dwarka. So similarly, Sri Vaishnavas have volumes and volumes and volumes and volumes of commentary on Ramayana, but it's all in Tamil. So, a team of 6 or 7 Tamil English-speaking devotees spent 1,500 hours translating all that stuff just from those two, the forest pastimes, Aranyakanda, and then meeting Hanuman, Kishkindakanda. We went to those two places. Then a little bit at the Sundarakanda when Hanuman starts his journey to Lanka. So that's what I took and make it simple for all the audience because as you saw in the video, there's people from China, they don't have Ramayana in Chinese. They don't know nothing about nothing. And then there were some new people and then there are some people that think they know something about everything in the audience. So, you know what I mean. So, how to take the teachings, the deep, profound teachings that the Sri Vaishnava Acharyas have rendered about Ram's pastimes and make it accessible. And in addition, the two other speakers, some of you know, Nityananda Pran has a deep love for Ramayana. And anyone that hears him speak about Ramayana watches him go from a 100-watt bulb to a 500-watt bulb. He's the one who coordinated the whole project. He's Tamil speaking. And he gave, you know, that pastime. Twice it happens where Sita takes a blade of grass when Ravana is approaching her and places the blade of grass between her and Ravana. And the acharyas give 18 different explanations of what is the significance of that blade of grass. Very deep. So that's in the recording. And the feedback that I got from the people who attended the yatra was there were three things they liked the most. That was one of them. This devotee, Shamakund's explanation of... So I've asked him to make a recording of not just what he did for 1.5 hours, but like a several-part, multiple explanation of those 18 explanations, and it's going to go into this flash drive. It's not done yet, but it will be in the flash drive. Very interesting. Another is, it showed an image of, we went to Pandharpur, which has nothing to do with Ram's Leela, but devotees like to go to places like that. So they saw Vittal, heard about Tukaram, and the life of Tukaram, and the deity of Vittal, and devotees from any parts of the world, they placed their head on the feet of Vittal. I was busy with my preparing for the yatra. I didn't get to do that. But so the images of that. And then the other is the 570 steps going up to the birthplace of Hanuman, Anjaneya Hill. And the devotee said that was one of the most invigorating experiences. It wasn't like they were out of breath by walking up all those steps. But the experience of being there, very ancient architecture, which is in the video. I hope he'll redo with some of those things. And there's Hanuman on the lap of his mother. And it was just like an awesome experience for people. So I'd like that to be in this promotional video. Someone can give him some feedback. How when we go to these places, I'm thinking not only the people that are there, how they can have a meaningful experience, but all the people that couldn't go, and how give them a meaningful experience. And that's what's it was intended by making this yatra recording available, so people can have that experience, and one day maybe you'll go. One of the places that I'm thinking to go also, I don't know when, but Badrinath, I was told by Bhakti Chaitanya Swami, a dear friend, at least once in your lifetime, go to Badri. So somehow we'll try to do that, but when to do that because of the weather and mudslides and too hot, or excuse me, too cold. Anyway, and can everybody go to Badri? Maybe not, but we can share the experience. That's the idea. This is just like sharing the message of Gita, the message of the Bhagavatam, the places of the personality of Godhead's pastimes, and sharing that with everybody. That's what is represented here. And a lot of time and energy went to making it accessible. So, Hare Krishna. Go ahead. Take it away.